Thank you so much. Good evening. This has been a blast. I've never done a show like this from so far away. So, thank you for having me. Yeah, my name is Jean Ann. I'm going to share some poems, and then I'm going to sit back and enjoy Lauren and the open mic with all of you. I will just a little intro. I am on the other side of the Zoom screen, but this is live, and I'm 100% real human being. I'm not AI. I'm not a hologram. I'm going to give you all the energy I have, and if that moves you to clap or gasp or cheer or cry, go for it. We're going to pretend that we're all in the same room at the same time. In the spirit of this event, I will be sharing work that focuses a lot on mental health and trauma. And so there's my content warning. If you need to take care of yourself, please do so. And with that, let's go on this journey together. This first poem is titled Good Girl. Every morning, I sit at the kitchen table over a tall glass of water, swallowing pills, so my hands won't shake, so my heart won't race, so my face won't thaw, so my blood won't mold, so the voices won't scream, so I don't reach for knives, so I keep out of the oven, so I eat every morsel, so the wine goes bitter, so I remember the laundry, so I remember to call, so I remember the name of each pill, so I remember the name of each sickness, so I keep my hands inside my hands, so the city won't rattle, so I don't weep on the bus, so I don't wander the guardrail, so the flashbacks go quiet, so the insomnia sleeps, so I don't jump at car horns, so I don't jump at cat calls, so I don't jump a bridge, so I don't twitch, so I don't riot, so I don't slit a strange man's throat. I live with bipolar disorder, and this next piece is a persona poem that's written in the voice of my own mania, speaking to me. This is titled The Mania Speaks. You clumsy bootlegger, little daffodil. I watered you with an ocean, and you plucked one little vein, downed a couple of bottles of pills, and got yourself carted off to the ER. I gifted you the will of gunpowder, a matchstick tongue, and all you managed was a shredded sweater and a police warning. You should be legend by now. Girl in an orange jumpsuit, a headline. I built you from the purest napalm, fed you wine and bourbon, preened you in the dark, hammered lullabies into your thin skull. I painted the walls, I wrote the poems, I shook your goddamn boots. Now you want out? Think you'll wrestle me out of you with prescriptions, a good man's good love, and some breathing exercises? You think I can't tame that? I always come home, always, ravenous, loaded. You know better than anybody. I'm bigger than God. This next poem, just a little preface, it's dated. I wrote it when I was 36, and I am no longer 36. That's going to be clear. This is titled The Session. Say alone 40 times, paired with the desert. Say it. Alone, alone, alone. Say it plain. Say it outright. Say the words plain, she says. Alone. No, don't get poetic. Say I, say me, say I am alone. Say your age, she says. 36, I say. Say it. I am 36. Own it. I am alone. I am 36. She says, tell me about the children. Don't use metaphor. I say, blue eyes. It's only a guess. We have, not we, she corrects. I have blue eyes. It's only a guess. Tell me about the children. There are hundreds, I say. Punch myself in the stomach. Hundreds. She says, no, tell me about your children. Tell you about the dead? No, she says, no one died. Say it clear. Stop the poetry. I say, the children in our, no, my future. Are hard marbles sunk to the bottom of a fish tank? No, there is no fish tank. There are no marbles. She is growing irritable. I say, there are no children. There. I stop talking. She asks more questions. I am mute. I am thinking of my sheets, thinking of my molding bathtub and how much blood could fill it. I think of a poem written by a friend about a tub full of teeth. I think about teeth falling out of my face, about my face opened by a bullet's exit. She asks what I am thinking about. I say, peanut butter. What about peanut butter? I say, I'm lying. She says, why? I say, there are no children. Never. I punch myself in the stomach. She says, stop, or I will restrain you. I dig my nails into the armrest. Don't damage the furniture, she says. I say, peanut butter. She says, the session is over. There is no she. It's just a subway car and a Tuesday morning where the fluorescent lights are flickering so loud it almost drowns out the voices telling me that I will die today. No one ever believes this. It's another one. Thank you. This is in the same vein. This is titled Tracing Wrist Scars. I used to keep exquisite potted plants. Now, pots of dirt. My friend Megan keeps pots of dirt, one with a ceramic hand creeping out, another a foot. Funny, the things we covet. I only learned to begin wanting again recently. I don't know where to place my wants. How to justify them, much less actually obtain. It isn't fair to want things after trying to give everything away. The wine isn't fair, overpriced penne, paycheck, new boot laces, a night out for music or poetry or beer, this guilt, wanting a day of sun or even rain, things that racket and wail, things that shimmy or sit quietly on a windowsill. Shameful. I think, to covet a tattoo or a philosophical conversation, a book, a trinket, a new poem, a pulse. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and look at various ways that trauma informs our mental health. I was primarily raised by my mother, who, though she was not diagnosed, I know to have struggled with psychological issues. And so here's some mommy issues poems. This first is titled Ode to My Mother's Backhand. I loved as a girl to help paint your nails, their perfect almond curve, longed for the same smooth knuckles. I mimicked the ritual of cream. I cannot forget the heavy, honeyed scent you left behind. My elbows, shoulders, the oily film remaining after grab and shove, effortlessly softening the cruelty of any mood. Oh, dainty left, clattering with hand-me-down gold, how I coveted your pitch, your reel, the sharp bite of your angles, sensuous fingering of a cigarette, rocks glass, studied you. Wrist deep in the raw mash of meat, egg, ketchup, watered bread. The whole hand crush of canned tomatoes, petite fork whisk of powdered sugar into milk, eucalyptus rub on my congested chest, your gentle swipe of tears, the intricate fold and knotting of braids. How, I'm sure, some part of me remembers your lift of breast to my infant mouth, calm stroke of my hairless scalp, the bath, the swaddling after. Such precision, even in beer-battered rage, to spin my jaw in whichever direction called. The hot red blossoms you lured to my cheeks, shrill crash of a vase knocked from its shelf, bowl of cereal struck from my hands, blood tooth launched skyward. Oh, commander of attention, how I would seize at your slow rise from across the room. such power, a noiseless siren wailing. I will come for you, child. In the same vein, Hereditary. I have a twitch sometimes. I keep my left eye open in my sleep. That hole in the bathroom door was not me. The scar on my forearm, an accident. Burst vessel in my eye, the blackened palms, tire marks on I-25, not me. The patch of scalp, doorknob through a bedroom wall, knife wound across the cabinet space, the sixth time we replaced a set of wine glasses, TV hurled like a dodgeball, the cell phone torn in half. I am not crazy. This is just Thursday. I live alone, pay rent and taxes. I cook and fold laundry. There are no monsters here. I don't see ghosts. I did not sleep with a razor in my teeth last night. I do not keep count of my 16-year pill collection. I haven't had a drink in 43 hours. I have four alarm clocks and too many shoes. This morning, I ripped open a tin can with my own hands, cursed a man at the bagel cart one time. I said, "Ma, calm down." And she slapped me so hard, I forgot her name. Awesome. I hope everyone out there is doing great. Sorry to the moms who do their very damn best to do it right. I know that is a nearly impossible ask. So, power and love to all the moms out there. We're going to switch gears. The title of this piece is, in case we weren't hadn't gotten dark enough, I'm just going to get darker. So stay with me. The title of this piece is "For the Woman Who Loved the Predator More Than His Prey." It opens with an epigraph by poet Marty McConnell. She writes, "I wanted to sing you a curse song. I would wish on you the knowing, knowing with your own good body, but I am incapable. You are made of flesh and nerve and thought, of heart and love and wonder and grief, as I am. Let me wish for you this, a deep sleep. Trust in the man at your back who is promised sanctuary. In you are almost whole in the clumsy wonder, is he the one? His mouth is filled with the world and he is giving it all to you and you believe. I will not wish for you the bruise, leap in the throat, shriek, the shock and scramble in your own flowered sheets, his glazed eyes, the sudden property you have become. You, a scatter of dust beneath a heave of muscle, he culls your pleas into a storm of thrust, grunt, drool. You here cannot move. You are nothing more than your wit and your lungs, and neither seem enough. You are the torn cotton, wrenched thigh, the perfect stone-colored fingerprint. You are the scrub and the sob, all his countless hands. I do not wish you become the night terrors, the flashbacks, the grief and grief and grief, insomnia, delusion, the disbelief, the holy, 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 holy wreck, the awe and burn. I do not wish you stay. Stay and forgive. I do not wish you forgiveness. I do not wish you cordial, polite. I do not wish you his manipulations or the mind's trickery. I will never wish you liar, as you have christened me. I do not wish you answer why or how or show me evidence. I do not wish you silence, shame, whiskey, box cutter, Xanax. I do not wish you erase, erase. I do not wish you anything to erase. I do not wish you this. No, no. I will never wish you this." This next poem looks at hypervigilance. It's titled "Meditation on a Poem About Glass Embedded in the Scalp After a Car Accident." It opens with an epigraph by poet Luke Bauerlin, who writes, "You live through all of it. The impact, the moment absorbed in the body. The poet writes about shards, how his body kept them. Skin grew over and eventually released the bits back into the world, something foreign and useless. And I am familiar with the effect, having picked the itchy glass of a Nissan from my own elbow as a child, a full year after the Lincoln sped head-on into our lane. And it isn't very different, or different at all, from how I wake at 3:06 a.m. every day. Though it has been over 3 years, and his shadow still rides the length of my body as if it now belongs to me. How my skin took in and grew over his violence, and now spits it back out in small fragments each time a man stands too close to me on the subway. Thank you very much. I have one more poem, but I want to thank you for your energy, your time, your generosity, your poems. I cannot wait to hear you, Lauren, and all of the open micers. This is going to be a great night. Paul, thank you for organizing. Thank you, Stan, for everything. I'm going to close on a much more tender note. We're going to land on a love poem, which I write very few of. So let's go with it. This opens with an epigraph by singer-songwriter Jeanette Napolitano. She writes, or sings, I guess, I've waited so long for you to be here. Can I have a souvenir so I remember that I was here? This poem is titled Lifespan of a Peanut. We kept each other's poems, most scrawled on coffee-stained napkins, hidden from the sight of other lovers for 26 years. We kept photographs and song lyrics and bits of broken jewelry and other trinkets locked away, literally in trunks or safes, a sacred, precious secret. He, for example, kept a peanut. Let me go back. I was 18. I loved him, and I wrote him a note. And in that note, I explained I was sad to have missed him when I stopped by his apartment unannounced on that particular sun gold sky shimmer summer afternoon. And I hoped he might call me later. But since I was there and he was not, and since I had a bag of peanuts and he did not, I thought maybe to share the last half of the last peanut, that perhaps he might like to have it. So I wrote, P.S., here's half of a peanut. I don't remember writing this note, nor tucking into its folds one half of one peanut, but he does. He remembers. He showed me the note all these years later, grayed in the corner where the peanut bled its oil, staining the paper, and he showed me the peanut itself, dark and hardened with time. He showed these to me, and they are as real as my chipped toenail polish or the way dawn relentlessly breaks open the horizon each day. And yes, perhaps the act of giving my lover a peanut was trivial or lunacy, but he kept that goddamn peanut for 26 years so he would remember I was there. And perhaps his choice to keep half of a peanut folded in paper hidden in secrecy for more than a quarter century is also lunacy. But when he came back to me, lifetimes later to Brooklyn, 1,700 miles from where we met, it will not shock you to learn that I wrapped in a satin pouch one half of one peanut and laid that pouch on what would be his pillow to welcome him home. Finally, home. That tiny half of that tiny peanut trying its clumsy best to say, I have waited so long for you to be here. Thank you.